This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Onslaught on Gaza enters its 87th day, with the death toll nearing 22,000 people, most of them women and children. A senior Hezbollah official warns that attacks on Israeli military sites will not stop unless the regime ends its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. And Iran says it takes pride in supporting the Palestinian resistance as a legitimate fight for liberation of the occupied territories. Welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is B News. Thanks for joining us. As the world is celebrating the Georgian New Year with fireworks and festivities, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are running for their lives and looking for places to shelter. The Palestinian death toll is approaching 22,000 amid relentless Israeli bombing of residential areas. The regime's airstrikes have also left over 56,000 wounded and more than 7,000 missing. Some of the latest Israeli attacks hit residential buildings in Khan Yunis, killing at least 35 people. The southern city has also witnessed fierce clashes between resistance fighters and Israeli forces over the past several days. A number of Palestinians were also killed in central Gaza, where Israeli warplanes struck several refugee camps. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has targeted Tel Aviv and its suburbs in response to Israel's deadly onslaught on Gaza. The Al-Assam brigades launched a barrage of rockets, with Israeli sources reporting failed interception of the projectiles. The regime's ambulances were also reportedly dispatched to the damaged sites. The Israeli regime says nearly 170 of its soldiers have been killed and almost 900 injured since the launch of the ground operation in Gaza. Palestinians say that fatalities among invading troops are much higher and that the regime is hiding the real number. The video has gone viral showing a group of Palestinian doctors in Gaza singing the former official anthem of Palestine and their desire to defend their homeland amid the Israeli genocide on the Gaza Strip. Doctors have refused to leave the Gaza Strip to help people as the coastal territory struggles with a critical health care situation due to the Israeli attacks. The regime's airstrikes have killed over 300 Palestinian medics since October 7. Israel keeps around 100 Palestinian medics, including chief physicians of hospitals in the northern Gaza Strip, in custody. Also, the regime's strikes have destroyed dozens of hospitals, ambulances, and medical centers. Nearly 3 months of Israeli fierce bombing has left many Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip displaced and without basic supplies. A correspondent in Gaza has talked to some people as they explain their desperate situation.
The situation is indescribable. We are subjected to an unprecedented systematic starvation. Our children are dying because of hunger. We have no access to humanitarian supplies. We only hear about them. We don't have water to drink or even to go to the bathroom. And the water, if it was available, is undrinkable. We don't even have gas to make food. It's miserable.
Our conditions are so dire. We have no food, no water. We haven't received any supplies yet. We are 15 individuals living in this small tent, having no blankets, covers, or clothes. Our children are suffering as they need to eat. The only thing we get is some canned food. I don't know what we're supposed to do with two or three pieces of canned bean or meat.
The circumstances are so difficult and unprecedented. I have 13 children and we all live in this tiny tent, as you can see, which shouldn't even be used by a human being because it's like a small agricultural warehouse, but there are no choices, and we have no options. Our situation is tragic, particularly when it comes to having access to food or water.
I fled my house in northern Gaza Strip to Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the central area, and after heavy bombings, I was injured, as you can see. Then I was forced to leave and come to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here. I don't have a place to sleep. We barely find food to eat. I was compelled to exchange a meat can with a couple of loaves to eat. It's so difficult.
We're originally from Al-Sheti refugee camp in Gaza City. We are four families, my married daughters and me. We are 22 individuals living inside this narrow tent. It's tiny and overcrowded. Our situation is disastrous. We don't have food, we don't have water, and above all of that, we haven't received any real supplies. Our babies need diapers and we don't know how to get them.
The Palestinian ambassador to Nigeria, Abdullah Abu Shawesh, believes Western countries are part of the problem and not the solution in the Gaza war.
The Western countries whom is creating Israel itself. And on top of that, we should remember, of course, Balfour Declaration 1917. All of these countries whom is created Israel and still supporting Israel is part of the problem, not the solution itself. In the current situation, I think you all witnesses in the very first days of the last Israeli aggression, when they and the majority of those countries, prime ministers, presidents, and others came to show solidarity and sympathy and empathy with Israel. It's not only a political issue, but also they did not hesitate to support Israel, not only in a political arena, but also in military issues. When it came to the political issue, just let us remember what happened a few weeks ago during this last escalation, Israeli escalation, when they blocked or vetoed two Security Council resolutions in the United Nations, and even the last resolution, which is unfortunately is not helping at all. It took them more than 1 week to negotiate and to download and to emptying the, any substantive meaning of this resolution. Just a few days ago, Haaretz, in the Israeli newspaper was talked about 230 aircraft was came to Israel, which is full, of course, not of a military weapons, military ammunition, and 30-something ships was came from the United States of America to Israel to support Israel, and all of these ammunition, of course, now will not go into the to their store. It will be bombed over Gaza and it will kill some people. So that United States is part of this atrocity, unfortunately.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas condemns an Israeli official's remark about forced displacement of Palestinians from Gaza. Hamas described as a vile mockery and a war crime the comments made by the far-right Israeli finance minister. Bezalel Smotrich on Sunday called for the immigration of around 2 million Palestinians from the besieged strip to other countries so that only 1 to 200,000 will remain there. He also said Israeli settlers should come to Gaza after the end of the regime's onslaught. In response, Hamas vowed that the people of Gaza will stand firm and steadfast against efforts to displace them from their own land. The Palestinian resistance movement also once again urged the international community to take effective measures to stop Israeli crimes. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it has carried out fresh attacks against Israeli positions in response to the regime's ongoing air and artillery strikes on Gaza. The resistance group said that it targeted a military site in Syria's occupied Golan Heights. It also attacked a target in the city of al-Rashrash, also known as Eilat, in the southern part of occupied Palestine. This is not the first time that Iraq-based resistance groups hit Eilat. Since October the 7th, they have also carried out a number of drone and missile attacks on U.S. bases in the region. They believe Washington is complicit in the Tel Aviv regime's onslaught on Gaza and its killing of tens of thousands of civilians. A senior official with Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says attacks on Israeli positions across the southern Lebanese borders will end only if the regime ends its onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza. Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Wassam says Israel's efforts to restore peace to the north of the occupied Palestinian territories will be in vain unless attacks on civilians in Gaza stops completely. The cleric warned that Israel's refusal to end the war in Gaza would lead to a further escalation and clashes with Hezbollah. The comments came after the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that the regime will do whatever it takes to restore calm to northern occupied Palestine, where settlers have either been displaced or live in constant fear of missile attacks by Hezbollah. The situation remains volatile along Lebanon's southern border, with the resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel continuing to exchange fire. Hezbollah says the attacks are in retaliation for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Earlier, our correspondent had this update from southern Lebanon.
Well, today in the early hours of the morning, we woke up to the Israeli shelling in the towns of Kfar Kila and also in the area of Mohammed. Of course, the shelling did not stop. There were also a lot of airstrikes. And the village of Ramya, in addition to the drone attacks against the town of Labuni, which is near the Nakura area on the western side of the coast. Of course, the Israelis continued their attacks, in addition to the fact that you have drones and surveillance and reconnaissance planes hovering over our heads on an hourly basis. In addition to the fact that we always see the airstrike, the fighter jets also in Lebanese airspace. Now, of course, Hezbollah did also launch several operations yesterday, the most significant of which was a drone attack against the barracks of Ramta. Now, today, their operation was conducted in the area of Hanita, and that was right after we heard from Israeli media reports that the sirens sounded in the western side of the Galilee. Usually we get an insight basically on whether there were Israeli resistance operations. After we know that there are sirens that sounded, the sirens usually go off whenever there are any missiles that are launched from the Lebanese side. And this is one of the issues that we have seen in Israeli media continuously. It seems that they are always in a tense situation. There are sirens are always sounding sometimes, even small issues. Sometimes there's no missiles, but they still do hear those sirens. But today we know that those sirens meant that there was a Hezbollah operation. It was in the barracks of Hanita specifically.
Iran's foreign ministry says the Islamic Republic is not afraid of announcing its support for the resistance front. The ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani made the remark during his weekly presser. Kanani said that Tehran considers the resistance front a legitimate movement in Palestine and the West Asia region under international law. The spokesman said resistance groups in occupied Palestine are struggling to liberate the land that belongs to Palestinians. He also slammed Western support for Israel. Kanani said those who ignore the natural rights of Palestinians should be held to account on the Gaza situation and should be ashamed. The spokesman added the supporters of the regime should be put on trial in international courts. Yemen's armed forces have vowed that the U.S. will pay the price for its deadly attack on Yemeni boats in the Red Sea. At least 10 Yemenis were killed in a U.S. attack on 3 Yemeni boats in the Red Sea.
10 Yemeni naval forces personnel were killed after successfully targeting another Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea, after preventing the cargo vessel from continuing its journey to occupied Palestine. The 10 Yemeni naval personnel were attacked by a U.S. Navy helicopter.
The enemy forces attacked 3 boats belonging to the Yemeni naval forces, which led to their martyrdom and loss of 10 members. The attack came as the naval forces were exercising their regular official duties in establishing security, stability, and protecting maritime navigation. Yemeni forces were also performing their humanitarian and moral duty to prevent Israeli ships to those heading to the ports of occupied Palestine from passing through the Red Sea in solidarity and support for the Palestinian people.
According to the spokesperson, the 10 members sacrificed their lives for the sake of ending the genocide in Palestine. He also confirmed that the U.S. will bear all consequences and repercussions for the crimes committed.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that the American enemy bears the consequences of this crime and its repercussions, and its military movements in the Red Sea to protect Israeli ships will not prevent Yemen from performing its religious, moral, and humanitarian duty in support and victory for the oppressed in Palestine.
According to news reports, the UK is currently preparing to join the US and other Western nations to conduct a series of military operations against Yemeni army and navy positions. Vowing to retaliate and continue targeting Israeli-linked ships, the Yemeni army has called on the Arab and Islamic world to be vigilant and to prepare for all options. Sana'a has previously warned that any act of aggression against Yemeni forces in the Red Sea will be met with military action that could ultimately spark a regional war. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
People around the world have held rallies on New Year's Eve in protest at the ongoing Israeli onslaught against Palestinians.
Today is a global celebration of the beginning of the new year. Every Jordanian today wanted to convey a message about how we celebrate or feel while just a few miles away, brothers, families and people in Gaza are being killed and slaughtered. Today, people around the world are celebrating the start of a new year. But Israel is celebrating the killings of more of our people in Gaza. This is my message. Today in particular.
Today we are present at Martyrs Square in Lebanese capital Beirut, responding to a global call from our people in Palestine to demonstrate, demand and exert pressure to stop the genocide committed by the Israeli occupation army against our people in Gaza and its aggression on southern Lebanon.
Mass solidarity rallies were held in the Jordanian capital Amman and the Lebanese capital Beirut. In Beirut, the protesters chanted slogans, waved flags and carried signs reading "Ceasefire Now." Also in Ramallah, in the occupied West Bank, hundreds marched in support of fellow Palestinians. In Berlin, pro-Palestine activists held a march to denounce the Israeli onslaught. They boycotted New Year celebrations. Similar boycotts were observed in many countries in solidarity with Palestinians. This follows calls for a global campaign to turn the New Year's countdown into a countdown for a truce. In the U.S. city of Boston, thousands of people ended 2023 with a rally for Palestinian rights instead of taking part in New Year's celebrations.
Well, the world is celebrating 2024, and Gaza, now after 87 days, and the bombing did not even stop. So it's a genocide that keeps going and going and going, you know? And the whole world is silent. And this is a shame, really, you know. The U.S. is supposed to stop the war. The U.S. even supplying the Zionists more weapons and more, you know, like bombs, etc., etc., you know. It's a shame, really. You know, the war is a shame.
I think it's really important for our elected people to know that we are not letting go of this in 2024. This is only going to get stronger. The majority of Americans want a ceasefire, and we're not going to stop interrupting life until we get it. No celebration when genocide is going on.
Stop the genocide!
Stop the genocide!
Stop the genocide!
The fact that I am a Jewish person, I was raised in a Jewish world, in a Jewish family, and it took me a long time to understand and to get to the point where I realized that I've been lied to all my life. I've been deceived and lied to, and I know the truth now, and I know that for 100 years, Palestinians have been living under genocidal, apartheid, atrocious conditions, and they are human beings, and they deserve and justice and equality.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war is continuing thanks to the U.S. disagreements over the cessation, wanting only a pause.
Well, we ask, has Israel taken into consideration the economic costs? The budget surely could not predict the length of the onslaught at a minimum, hence the cost, nor can it now as to when it's going to end. So how much has this onslaught cost Israel? That's the focus of this edition of Economic Divide. Some of the highlights of this program, Israel's economic costs. We're looking at $600 million per week, give or take. That's the problem. They're not sure. You have the reservist salaries. Again, a number which is not consistent with their predictions. And how businesses are going to be compensated, all affecting the bottom line there in Israel. Then you have the economic crisis as a result of all of this. Business shutdowns have occurred. There's been a lack of workers in different sectors, such as hospitality, agriculture, and construction. And then the challenges that Israel is facing at this point. There's a capital flight. There's exodus out of Israel, capital flight meaning investments. And also you have the uprising that's taking place in the occupied West Bank. On how many fronts is Israel actually finding itself?
As the U.S.-Israel genocidal war in Gaza enters its third month and the death toll continues to rise, Israel's economy is also paying a heavy price. According to some reports, more than 760,000 Israelis are not working due to the genocidal war. That is 18% of the regime's workforce. Most of these are serving as reservists. Some of them have also been evacuated from their settlements near Gaza and Lebanon. Many businesses in the occupied territories have suspended their operations there. A wide range of industries has been affected. They include entertainment, hospitality, agriculture, high-tech, and textile. The labor shortage in high-tech is especially worrying, since that sector accounts for nearly 20% of Israel's gross domestic product, GDP, and almost half of the regime's exports. The tourism and entertainment industries are also suffering from the effects of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. A third of restaurants in major cities have not reopened since October 7th. That's due to a lack of employees and sometimes a lack of customers as well. The construction sector has also been affected. That is because of a shortage of labor, which is mainly recruited from Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
Time to find out what's being posted online on this special social media post. We're actually going to start out with a website, and this is a flashback in order for you to see what Israel faced before going into this genocidal war. Israel's economy may lose $14 billion annually due to the so-called judicial overhaul crisis that it was experiencing, in which the judicial overhaul planned to trigger mass protests in Israel. That's before, so you can see the challenge that Israel faced. Now, a viewer comment. A Jew who is against occupation is the name of this viewer comment, who said that U.S. taxpayers will pay for all Israeli war efforts and war crimes, as always. Next, another website, War on Gaza. Despite U.S. aid, Israel's economy has been hit hard. And this was written on the 19th of December. So this is what this website then went on to add. Urgent American aid may help partially, but the damage to the Israeli economy as a result of its war on Gaza has been done and will escalate. Furthermore, the military industry, another one of Israel's major export sectors, will also be harmed as all local production is directed to the troops in the battle. And finally, Israel's budget deficit soars in November as government pours 5.8 billion shekels into Gaza war. Figures show the budget deficit is swelling to 3.4%. As the government expenditure has been increased to 46.9 billion shekels and tax revenues drop to 16.5%, led by sharp declines in income from real estate taxes. Well, as you just read there, these are different ways that the Israeli economy is actually impacted and how it's losing money overall. For the first segment of our Q&A, Alice Rothschild joins us. Alice Rothschild is a author and filmmaker. She's author at Broken Promises and Broken Dreams, and she's also a member of the Jewish Voice for Peace. Alice Rothschild, welcome to the program. So the genocidal war has entered its third month. It's a grim milestone, looking at about 20,500 deaths. Israel's economy is paying a price at the same time. A whole range of industries are affected, hospitality, entertainment, agriculture, and the most important one, high tech. Now, I'd like to focus in my question to you on the workforce shortage. How can the lack of workers be solved when Israel is continuing with this genocidal war?
Well, we know that about 18% of the workforce is not working in the usual economy, either because they're reservists fighting this war or they're displaced people from the borders of Israel. And it seems that the only way that the economy will recover is if Israel isn't using these workers to fight the war. So ending the war seems to be the most reasonable alternative. I should point out, though, that when you think about it, the companies that supply the military, that supply the surveillance, that supply all the weapons, they're probably making a lot of money. So there are certain sectors that are obviously making huge profits from war, but the main sector of, you know, technology and entertainment and all the tourism and those kind of sectors are suffering.
All right, thank you for that. Let's bring in the next guest, Wafiq Faour. Vermonters for Justice in Palestine. I guess he's a Vermonter, maybe, that he is part of this group. But thank you, Wafiq Faour, for joining us here in this program. The Israeli economy is heavily losing money. Different sectors of the economy is a testament to that. We're looking at one figure that's pretty high, $600 million per week, spending millions to pay with the reservists, salaries, and also compensation for businesses that were affected by the war are the added cost. How do you think Israel is going to be able to sustain this momentum, especially since there are really no signs as to when this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war is going to end?
Yeah. 20% of the Israeli workers are part of the reserve army, and they are not functioning. Two, there is another problem that our activism for boycotting Israeli products, which is taking more effect after the war against Gaza. And we finding it that many companies are losing because of that. So Israel economy is not going to be the same economy pre-October 7.
Time now for the Info News section of the program. Again, we are focused on the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. First up, a boycott took place by a country by the name of Malaysia, and they are very much into this anti-Israeli and the genocidal war that is executing on the Gaza Strip. Malaysia has actually banned Israeli flagged ships from its ports in response to Gaza war, and that is an unprecedented move against, in this case, the Israeli entity. Prime Minister has said that Israel's actions violate international law through the ongoing massacre and the brutality against Palestinians. This may start a trend. We have to wait and see as long as this genocidal war continues. Next up, the entry read cashing in on genocide. It went on to say Israeli firm pitches beachfront real estate in leveled Gaza. So basically there's a picture that they posted, and it had villas in the Gaza Strip, and behind it, there were destroyed buildings. This is no joke. It said a house on the beach is not a dream. That's what the ad read, and came from this company, which is notorious for building in the occupied West Bank. Obviously, we had to have our take on this, and we look at such plans that have been compared with the Nakba ethnic cleansing of more than 750,000 Palestinian Arabs by deadly violence and forced displacement by the Israeli regime from Palestine during the establishment of Israel back in 1948. All right. Next up, the port by the name of Eilat of Israel. It has reached a standstill. The income has been impacted. 85% is the announcement that was made. We have now seen for the port to be inactive based on certain reports. This, of course, is because of the fact that you have the entry calls at Houthis, we call it the Ansarullah Movement, or the Yemeni army, really, that have escalated the attacks in the Red Sea. It's at Eilat, which sits adjacent to Jordan's only coastal access point at Aqaba, offers Israel a gateway to the east without the need to navigate the Suez Canal. All right? So that's how serious and successful the and sort of movement of the Yemeni army has been in targeting Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea and beyond even. Now, we focus on the occupied territories where there's a cash crunch, basically, or cash squeeze, where the report said about 50% of early-stage startups have a cash horizon of less than 6 months, based on a survey that was taken. So only up to the next 6 months is the amount of money they have in their reserves. Went on to say more than half of early-stage startups fear that they will not be able to secure another round of critical financing amid this war. Okay, those were the topics we picked for this section. As usual, I should say this would have been something that we may have continued, but at this point, I believe that we're coming out of the genocidal war a little bit. We may focus on another topic for next week, which hence will then lead to the Info News section being a little bit more varied in that respect.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of the program. We're going to take a look at sectors that have set back the Israeli economy. These are the sectors: company closures, job losses, per capita income, insurance premiums, the tech sector, the big one, and GDP growth, the impact on it. First, we're going to take a look at the company closures in terms of the numbers and how many have closed, 57,000. The reasons for the closures: inflation, 4%, deflation, can't calculate that because it goes into negative territory. Hasn't happened yet. You have the army drafts that are 350 to 400,000, and also the Gaza border evacuations, 700,000. I must say that that's an artificial border that has been placed on the Gaza Strip based on the settlements. Next up, we go to the job losses that have occurred. Full-time job losses, 256,000 since the war started. Then you have the temporary workers. They were laid off, 80,000. You have the ones that are now on the assistance by the budget of Israel, 160,000 of them, out of a job, and altogether 1.3 million in terms of the workforce. That's 30% of it that are not part of the economy. Next up, we go to per capita income, $54,660 for 2022. Now, this figure has dropped for the year 2023, mainly because of the war now, down to $46,461. That's a 15% decrease. The impacts that this have are many, in which this circle is going to point to it because of the war has affected every Israeli. Standards of living, unemployment, inflation, inequality, all a consequence of this war. So you can see how that is detrimental and how Israel is suffering. Next up, we go to the insurance premiums. Non-Israeli vessels, 100%. These are for the shipping, and of course you know that the Yemeni army is targeting the vessels. 250% for Israeli vessels is what the premium has gone up to. Local markets, competitiveness, and imported raw materials all have been affected because of the war, in particular by the Yemeni army targeting Israeli-linked vessels. The all-important tech sector, the investment down 50%. That's a lot. That contributes almost 20% of the Israeli economy. Number of deals down 38%. Again, another big figure. And then you have staff shortages in terms of the employees. They've been called for duty, one of the reasons. But it has reduced the staff by 10 to 15%. Now, the GDP growth, the impact that it has had. Let's look at this before the war, what it was, which is 3.1% for Q1 through 3. And then for Q4, it's down to 2.4%. Okay? So the pivotal and key impact that this has had on Israel and its economy. Well, let's find out what our guests think. That's more important about all of this. Let me bring them back. We have Wafik Faor, Vermonters for Justice in Palestine, who rejoins us. Wafik, welcome back to Economic Divide. You know, the war cost is pretty incredible in terms of the numbers, anywhere from $250 to $260 million daily for Israel. On the other hand, of course, the economy is losing money as a result. You have capital flight to add to that. You have mass exodus of people out of Israel. And given Israel's uncertainty when it comes to its economic standing, how can Israel ever regain or try to recoup the losses and even stay afloat, based on some accounts?
There is, we have to rethink what Israel now, post October 7th. We cannot rethink it that it will regain what they lose on this war. The war in Gaza, it changed all this calculus. Number one, there is opposite or reverse migration from Israel. We heard at least over a quarter of a million of Israeli who carry second passports, they already left Israel. We know that the cheap migrants that they are coming from Thailand, India, and others are leaving Israel. And their farms has no workers and no laborers to continue. Their factories are out of work, and their hotels are closed, no tourism, etc. I don't believe it will repair itself on a short term or long term.
All right. We heard about, obviously, the staff and the number of employees to be the focus of the comments made there by our guest. But there's a more important issue that needs to be dealt with here. I want to ask that from our guest who rejoins us, Alice Rothschild, author and filmmaker. Alice Rothschild, welcome back to the program. I think it's a proper time to address what needs to be addressed. I think it's something that's somewhat maybe forgotten in between the awful and shocking scenes that are coming out of the Gaza Strip, and that is how to deal with this and the root cause of it to be tackled. What do you think? Is that being discussed enough, and how should that be addressed?
Right. So the root causes of this crisis are the ongoing occupation of the occupied territories and the siege of Gaza. It is not a reasonable expectation by Israel and the Israeli government and military to think that you can suppress and oppress a group of people endlessly, and that somehow keeps Israeli citizens safe. Ultimately, oppressed people will react and try to fight back their oppressive situation. So unless that oppression, the siege, the occupation, the second-class citizenship of Palestinians in Israel, unless the refugees are addressed, then this conflict will never resolve.
The Israeli regime's central bank says the shortage in workers is costing the economy a staggering $600 million a week. The cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is also spending millions to pay reservists salaries and to compensate businesses that were affected by the U.S.-Israeli onslaught, which is also putting a strain on the budget. There are direct and indirect costs of Israel's genocidal war also. The direct expenses refer to the hot cash losses the regime incurs every day, leading the cabinet to seek $6 billion in loans with a high and unusual interest rate to fund its aggression. This includes, but is not limited to, the daily cost of weapons, tools, and supplies, wages and salaries of the reserve forces, and damages, depreciation, and maintenance of military machinery. As for the indirect expenses, the U.S.-Israel genocidal war has negatively affected several economic sectors, and a sharp drop of revenues in transportation in the port of Eilat has badly affected the regime's economy. The question is, with capital flight and mass exodus out of Israel, and given Israel's uncertainty and instability in occupied Palestine altogether, how can Israel hope to regain its economic strength?
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apossian. In the in-depth section, Kaveh covered some instances of how the Israeli economy is suffering. The Israeli onslaught has created major financial and economic headaches for Israel in more ways than one. There doesn't seem to be a way to figure out how much money is needed to continue with this genocidal war when it comes to the budget. This has led to the entire revision of the 2023-2024 budget. So, what are the discrepancies? The direct cost of the genocidal war on the Israeli economy, according to the regime's finance minister, was announced to be $245 million daily. But the Bank of Israel disagreed. It said onslaught would cost $269 million per day and is poised to take a bigger toll on the regime's economy than previous conflicts. Here are some other figures which were below the actual expenditure of this genocidal war. $6.25 billion, the expected cost of military operations for 60 days, which included ammunition, equipment, and mobilizing reserves. $4.25 billion, the expected cost of health and financial compensations for individuals and companies affected by the war. $6.9 billion, the expected loss to the public finance due to the decline in tax revenues lost. Some economic sectors, such as the restaurant industry, have declared tax disobedience due to their suspension of operations. The figures just did not add up. They were either a lot higher or lower in some cases, like when it comes to the Israeli economic losses. The Israeli economy's losses due to the onslaught was $17.2 billion. This included economic material damages, operations costs, and the additional deficit. According to the budget, the total expenditure for the needs of the war in 2023 should be around $8 billion, $4.7 billion for the military, and about $3.32 billion for civil and other expenses. But the total cost of the genocidal war now came in at a much higher price tag, $41 billion to $50 billion, equal to up to around 10% of gross domestic product. This was based on the genocidal war to last between 8 to 12 months. Budget and cost inconsistencies were predicted. The finance ministry earlier had warned that Israel's onslaught will likely exceed estimates 2.3% of gross domestic product in 2023 and 3.5% in 2024. That does it for this edition of the Quick Take section.
The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war is costing Israel a lot. The regime forces are being taken out by the resistance fighters, and obviously that is not good news for Israel, who wanted to, had the goal of eradicating Hamas and the resistance fighters. That's not happening. Meanwhile, Israel has lost its economic standing, and one country after another are either adopting more boycott measures or they're turning sour on Israel overall. Diplomatically also having an impact. Post-Israeli onslaught is where this is going to be the focus. But what kind of a post-onslaught will there be for Israel? And even the U.S., for that matter, they have both come down based on the genocide that they've executed in the Gaza Strip. And last but not least, Yemen's targeting of Israeli-linked vessels. Will that stop the genocidal war? That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. We've really enjoyed it. I'm Kaveh Tahlai, and it's goodbye from the entire team here at Economic Divide.
Rabbi Ravi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIV English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIV English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about the concept of human being in the Holy Quran. In the previous episode, we talked about different dimensions of human being according to the verses of the Holy Quran. First was the duality or dichotomy between mind and body. And after that, we talked about the concept or the word an-nafs in the Holy Quran, soul and different functions of the soul. And now we should talk about another word that refers to one of the dimensions of human being. And I can say, and you can also count at the end of these discussions and these episodes, we can see what the result would be. But I think, according to my research, the positive elements in human soul are more than the negative elements. The elements that make us go towards perfection and good things are more than the elements that call us towards the negative or vicious acts and desires, things like that. So it's like a person who is like a student in a university, and there are many situations for that student to study. There is the library, there is the study room, there are classrooms, there are other things, all the facilities for the proper academic nurturing of this student is available. But somehow you find him ending up in cafes and wasting time in here and there. You see? So if you make some calculation, you see that the grounds available for the perfection and proper education are more than the grounds for failure. But then again, some people find you find them ending up in the wrong direction. And that is true for human soul as well, that there are different things that are in favor of this being in this journey. There is the intellect, there is the qalb, we should talk about the heart. There is al-fitra that we should talk about. Even when there are soul, there is the soul, we saw that there are two souls that are good, or even, yes, two souls, an-nafsul mutma'inna, and then we had an-nafsul functions of the soul, which were good, self-blaming. And then two souls that were bad, like soul of or commanding soul, and also decorating, justifying soul. So it was equal. If we don't add to the positive ones, an-nafsul radiya al-mardiya. And also we have verses, فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَغْوَهَا. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives abilities to the soul, He gives equally both negative and positive tendencies. But then we have it's either equal or it's in favor of righteousness. As I said, fitra, for example, is one of the things that make everything tip the balance in favor of righteousness to a great degree. But then you see that many people may end up commit many relatively, not in the whole community of human beings. I'm talking relatively. Relatively, even if one person, if two persons, if 100 people go into the direction of the vicious acts, that also problematic and questionable. Why? Because you had all the elements that were in favor of you. There is a hadith in this regard. A person said at the presence of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, Al-ajab kullul ajab. It's very surprising that if a person can find his way towards paradise with all the difficulties that are there in this way of perfection. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam said no. In fact, it is strange for a person to end up in the hellfire considering the great amount of Allah and divine mercy for us, both in the creation and in the nurturing. In rububiyyah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has taken every step that is necessary for us to just go into the right direction. We will have a break and we come back to continue the discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to your program for Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In the previous segments, we talked about the elements that we have in our soul according to the verses of the Holy Quran. Most of them are in favor of the right direction, the righteous act. And one of these things that I said that would tip the balance in favor of the righteous act is fitra, the concept of fitra that is in full opposition to some other ideologies that believe in the original negative thing in the human beings and in the children of Adam. All of them, they have inherited an original bad thing, bad act from their father. In fact, Quran is standing in full opposition, in the whole complete contrast to that, and saying that all human beings have been created with a fitra, with an origin, with a nature that is inherently divine. But divine doesn't mean they are godly or there is a part of God within them. Even the verse that says, وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِمَ الرُّوحِ, I think we have said this. It doesn't mean there is a part of God within us. نَفَخْتُ فِيهِمَ الرُّوحِ, the relationship I have breathed into human being from my spirit. This my spirit, according to our ahadith, means is like when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about the Kaaba and he says, بَيْتِ, my house. This is an honorary attribution, not an attribution that is like possessive and something belongs to Allah, or even possessive in being part of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. No, that is not the case. But even considering human being as a distant and a unique entity from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, again, this fitra is there, this innate nature that calls human being towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And there are different verses that says, for example, one of them we can cover in this episode and the rest would be for the next episode. فَأَقِمْ وَجْهَكَ لِلدِّينَ حَنِيفًا, stand and keep your face upright. لِلدِّينَ حَنِيفًا, towards the religion. حَنِيفًا means to the right path, not taking sides. فِطْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَطَرَ النَّاسَ عَلَيْهَا, this is the innate nature that belongs to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And allati fatara an-nasa alayha, by which or based on which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created everyone. An-nas, people, doesn't mean just Muslims, just believers. Everyone has that fitra, that has innate nature. La tabdila li khalqila, and there is no change in the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Some people think modernism has changed humanity as completely. No. There is a nature that we share all as human beings throughout the stages, different stages of history. Yes, the manifestation of that nature changes, but the main elements of that nature, which, for example, yearning for justice or yearning for moral values and things like that, are equal among different generations and different historical stages. ذَلِكَ الدِّينُ الْقَيِّمُ, That is the correct religion. The religion that is based on that fitra. Religion, there is one sign for the divine religion, and that for that religion to be compatible with divine fitra. ذَلِكَ الدِّينُ الْقَيِّمُ وَلَكِنْ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسَ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. Many people don't understand that the religion that they follow should be compatible with the fitra that Allah has given them. It's like a key and a lock. If the key doesn't work with the lock, the key is not for that lock. If the religion, if you find in the Holy Quran, matches with what you find in yourself, as many people have reported when they recite the Holy Quran, that shows that is based on fitra. Thank you very much for listening. Inshallah, we continue the discussion next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.